Getting our Live Music Friday started here today with Peter Harper and Will Rideout. They comprise about half of the group Harper and Midwest Kind, its current state's first didgeridoo in Studio S. And we're going to learn more about this intriguing instrument and Harper and Midwest Kind. You may have seen the band on WKAR-TV's Backstage Pass. They made an appearance last year. They've got a new CD, and they've got a show tonight in Ann Arbor and tomorrow night here in Lansing. More from Peter Harper and Will Rideout throughout the hour here on a Live Music Friday from WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Welcome back. Michigan legislators continue working on different plans to stabilize the beleaguered Detroit public schools. Separate proposals in the House and the Senate both aim to pay off DPS's soaring debt, that's in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and to restore stability to the district. But differences remain. Our next guest played a leading role in crafting the package of Senate measures that passed that chamber last week. Republican Senator Jeff Hansen of Hart chairs the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on K-12 School Aid and Education. Senator Hansen's also said he's open to replacing the recently adopted M-STEP assessment for Michigan school kids. The first M-STEP test was administered just a year ago. Let's learn more. Jeff Hansen, thank you for joining us today.
Well, good morning, Mark.
Your measures, the Senate measures and the House's measures, would both create two school districts in Detroit, one to relaunch education of its 40-some thousand students, and the other would exist only to help pay off the hundreds of millions in debt. You'll soon sit down with members of the House and discuss the details of yours and theirs, I presume. What do these discussions need to accomplish in your view?
Well, I think that we need to make sure we sit down and discuss exactly how I came to where I'm at on my bills. I think that we can talk about where they're at on their bills. This is something that I felt that I could work on because we've had the same type of thing done right up here in my district in Muskegon Heights,
right,
where they did that, and it seems to be working pretty well. The elementary school is actually the most improved school in the county, so they've done some good work there. I think we can have the same thing in Detroit.
Think that adds a lot of credibility to what you put into your bill, the fact that you've got a very challenged district, a very challenged school system in your district?
Yeah, I believe so, and being it's not a new concept to me that we've worked on it for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. We've had some challenges, but fought through them, and things are looking much better.
Let's run through a few of the key features of the Senate measure. Oops. You maintain that your plan maintains education choice. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that the parents get to decide where they want their kids educated, whether it's a traditional school or whether it's a charter school. And we're not picking one over the other. We're just saying you can have the choice, and we just want to have quality choices.
And does the House package address school choice differently?
A little bit. We've got the Education Commission in where any schools that are less than an A or a B will have to go through the Education Commission to ask for a siting spot or to make sure that they're up to the quality to be able to open. Anybody that's an A or a B, we figure that they are excellent schools, so we want them to replicate, and so we're allowing them to do that without having to go through the Education Commission.
Now, what else would an Education Commission be responsible for? I take it grading the individual school systems would be one. Would it have other functions?
Well, the grading of the individual school districts or schools would be done by the School Reform Office. That is something that we'd like to get to have statewide, so we have the same thing statewide. Everybody is under the same A through F grading system. We haven't quite got there yet, but we're going to start with it in Detroit under this bill. And I think that some of the other things that we've asked them to look at is some of the other issues that might go with the problems that they have, being the wraparound services, the transportation, just take take a look at all different things, and that's why we want the different advocates on there to figure out what we need to do to get a better quality outcome for the kids in Detroit.
There has been quite a back and forth here over this Education Commission piece. Does the House measure call for an Education Commission, or does it leave that out?
They've left that out. It's one of the pieces that I've been back and forth on. Also, I think that the
How come? What's the issue for you?
Well, there's challenges on having a group that decides where schools will go, whether they can open. But we've got an issue in Detroit where we have parts of the school or parts of the city that don't have access for the kids in their parts of the city. And we'd like to work with some of the schools to get some schools open in areas that there aren't schools, so the kids don't have to go all the way across town to go to school. And so this, by the work that we've done, allowing the higher rated schools to replicate, I think that we've taken some of the angst out of it.
We're talking with State Senator Jeff Hansen, a Republican from Hart, who chairs the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on K-12 school aid and education. We're talking about the his Senate plan for writing the DPS and how it differs here from the House plan and the discussions that are will be taking place soon over those two. Your proposals would return local control to an elected school board next year. The House measure would, or could, I guess, take 8 years to return complete control to elected board members. And this difference has triggered a lot of discussion as well. I take it you've got more buy-in from Detroiters for the Senate plan because of that. Do I have that right?
Yeah, actually we do. And the timing would be, if we can get the legislation done in time, is we're looking at actually having the election in August. And so there would be no appointed school board put in place before the election. The Judge Rhodes would continue on until the school board was in place. Then the school board would be able to take over. Personally, I think that we need Detroit to be in charge of their schools. This will never be successful. Their schools will never be successful until Detroit is in charge of their own system there. They have to want it to work.
Now, does that mean, Jeff Hansen, that you think the DPS requires less oversight than your colleagues in the House?
Well, I'm possibly. I'm looking at the financial oversight is a big part of it. We need to make sure that, we had the indictments in the last week, and I look back at my bill and notice that, as we did it, we wanted to make sure that there was strong financial oversight, and that's why we used the Financial Review Commission that the city has in place to oversee any of the finances for the city or for the school also.
Now, the House measure would also restrict union activities, reduce retirement benefits for new teachers, and, as I said, delay the return to local control for quite some time. What do you make of those differences? What do you make of all those provisions?
Well, I think there's just some personal choices that people wanted to put into there. And
personal choices? What does that mean?
Well, I some people have different philosophies, and they want to put some of that into the bill. Personally, I'm not trying to punish Detroit because it punishes the kids if we try to do that. I'm trying to put together a program where it gives them the opportunity to be successful. It gives them the opportunity to make sure that the kids get the education that they deserve. And if they're in charge of it, they're the ones that are going to make sure that it works. And I've sat down with the union folks also and talked to them about some of the, making sure that we're transitioning from the old co to the new co, from the old school district to the new, making sure that the folks still have their jobs as they transfer, because we're already 160 to 180 teachers short in Detroit, and it's difficult to fill those positions. And so we need to get to where it's we can fill the positions and make sure we have the instructors that we need so that they will be successful.
You and your fellow Republicans have had your fair share of harsh criticism, who use language like you're conducting a war on education and you have a plan to destroy public education in Michigan. What do you make of that criticism? How do you respond to it?
I respond to it as education hasn't changed in so long, and the world has changed. We have to be realistic about what we're trying to do and how we're trying to get to the end. There is no war on public education. It's just a matter of how it's delivered, and we can't be using the 1940 delivery method anymore. We have to take a look at how we're doing it today, and we can't live in the past. We have to educate for today, and it takes a little. I know there's been some angst in some of the things, but we've had to look at the financial issues that we have, because back in the 2000s we went through some really tough times, and everybody all the way through had to share in the solution.
The DPS's serious challenges have brought more scrutiny to Michigan's emergency manager law. There are some who allege, many who allege, I think, that these problems are the result of too much authority concentrated in too few hands. Here's my question for you. Do you think DPS has been served well or poorly by its emergency managers?
Well, I don't think that it's been perfect. I will admit that the state's been part of it, but there were reasons that the emergency manager was put in place, and it wasn't because it was running perfectly. And so I don't think it's made it worse, but I don't think that it did what we'd hoped it would do, just because it's so large. There's been several other instances where the emergency manager has worked exactly how it's supposed to. You get in, you do make the decisions that have to be made, and you get out. And then you transfer it back and have something that's running better.
I want to save time here and get in a little bit about the M-STEP. A year ago, Michigan students in grades 3 through 8, along with high school juniors, took their first M-STEP assessment. You've become a skeptic of that. You recently said you're open to replacing it. Help us understand your concerns with it. What in your view, is not right about the M-STEP assessment?
Well, I got to tell you, it's one of the things that I've had the most complaints about from my schools. It's the amount of time testing with the kids having to be in their, not so much in their seats, but taking a test for so long. And from what I understand, some of the, even the instructions took a half hour to read to the kids at times. So it was a little bit of overkill on some of that. This year I've been promised that there would be less testing time. The other problem was it took 6 months to get the results. And you've got a computer test that takes 6 months to get the results. There's huge problems, because the information that you get back is worthless if you can't get it back immediately. And so this year I've been promised, actually, that they'd have their information within 48 hours. The testing time is down. And so we have tests that have been used nationally for a long time that a lot of our schools are already using, that we could use as our summative test rather than having to give another test on top of the computer adaptive tests that they're already taking.
I spoke yesterday with a Democratic colleague of yours on the Appropriations Committee, Senator Hoon-Young Hopgood. He commented on this idea of dropping the M-STEP. I'd like to listen to what he said and then get your response. Here he is.
What we're asking local schools to do is to meet some benchmark, and yet we continue to quibble over the benchmark and change it. We talked about how bad the MEEP was for all those years, and we switch over to the M-STEP, and now we're getting ready to dump that. So I'm just really frustrated, and I can imagine how folks out in the field would be really frustrated over lack of stability and lack of coherence.
I mean, it was just this a year ago that the very first M-STEP was administered. Does he have a point? Should we give this thing more time?
Well, he is, first of all, he's right on with the trying to get some stability. And the challenges are is we have to get to something that we can have long-term. Because it's changing it every other year, it doesn't work. You know, we shouldn't do that. But then we also have to get something that works, that we can be a little long-term. Now, the M-STEP, when they first started, from what I understood, they were, because they had to put it together quickly, that it was going to be a short-term solution. And now we're looking at, in the future, we have to have stability, because it's changing everything. It's turmoil in the last 10 years. I don't know how many different tests they've had to look at,
right,
and things like that.
We've got to let it go there. Here, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say, but we want to thank Republican Senator Jeff Hansen of Hart. He is the chair of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on K-12 School Aid and Education. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll have you back. Thank you, Senator.
All right. Thank you.
Peter Harper and Will Rideout live in Studio S here at WKAR on a Live Music Friday. They got a new CD out. What's that called, by the way, guys?
Show Your Love. Just came out today.
The title cut from the new CD. There's a release performance scheduled for tonight in Ann Arbor. Where is this?
It's at the Blue Tractor, also called the Mash Bar downstairs at the Blue Tractor right there in the middle of Ann Arbor.
And tomorrow night in Lansing, and that is where?
The Robin Theater.
Robin Theater. Actually, I knew that.
Should be fun.
Well done. More from Peter Harper and Will Rideout before the hour is through on a Live Music Friday. The Arts Council of Greater Lansing is hosting a reception tonight for a local artist with deep roots in Old Town Lansing. Julian Van Dyke's paintings have appeared in many venues in the region, from office buildings to malls and school campuses. Current State's Kevin Lavery met up with him this week as he was preparing for his showing down on Turner Street. Kevin, paint us a portrait of the artist, please.
As a young man, as they say.
Please, yeah.
Happily, Mark, when I first walked into the gallery, Julian was there waiting for me with his round-rimmed glasses and his black flat cap. He was channeling Samuel L. Jackson, which people will see online, by the way, when we post the story. Julian Van Dyke is a painter known for his murals and for his work with the Lansing School District as an artist in residence. And as we stood there in the heart of Old Town, it was obvious that Julian is proud of his city.
I've been a part of Old Town for the last 20 years, and I had a studio open on Turner Street. So the pieces that I'm hanging now is almost like in gratitude of different things within the city of Lansing. And I'm paying respect not only to the park, but individuals like Robert Busby. Yeah, it's more like a reflection and a gratitude.
Right, Robert Busby, the unofficial so-called mayor of Old Town, who sadly, tragically, was taken from us in 2007.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but he left his footprint here in the community, and I hope that not only me, but other people continue the direction that he started as far as the art district here in Lansing.
Let's take a stroll, Julian, about 6 feet to the wall here, to something that I'm guessing looks like a self-portrait, or maybe that's someone else.
Here?
Yes.
That is Robert Busby.
See, I thought that was you. You look very similar to him.
Yeah, well, you know what? I can tell you many stories. Our families, my mom and dad, and he's from a certain part of Tennessee, and which I didn't know until like maybe a couple weeks until he was murdered, that we had this discussion, and we like, yeah, my mom is from Tennessee too. So we start discussing, but he was a fabulous artist in his own right. Yeah, he was. I took a picture of him. We were just kidding around, and my first big art opening here, he helped me in a lot of ways. He provided an oven to heat the food that was catered in. And he helped me hang pictures at the Sir Pizza restaurant here on the corner. And
so much for the starving artist motif.
So much for the starving artist. And he taught me a couple things of hanging art. And he was very instrumental of taking a piece out to Michigan State. It hangs at the business School of Business at the Lear Center, in which he let me use his little red truck. And it was hanging off his little red truck, but we got it there in one piece.
I'm looking over here, and I'm seeing what looks like the Capitol building and Boji Tower, but I'm also seeing in this something that looks like Joan Moreau, maybe?
Well, when I first moved to Lansing back in 1979, there's a lot of things happening. And, you look west down on Michigan Avenue. It didn't look like that. Alex's restaurant was there. And I just pulled that out. This is mainly all these are prints. But this particular piece hangs at the School of Business at Michigan State University, too. But kind of nostalgia type of thing. Alex is not there. You got the center of Lansing there. And, at that particular time, it wasn't called Boji. It was called the Michigan National Bank Tower. And it's probably the largest structure here in Lansing. But I just thought, being from where I am, Benton Harbor, just like the biggest city next to New York City. So I always...
Well, Chicago is not far away from Benton Harbor.
I did murals in Chicago. More so, I'm closely related to Chicago, more so in Detroit, because Benton Harbor is like 90 miles away from Chicago. So I did a lot of work over there. But moving to Lansing at that particular time, we had the Michigan State Irvin Johnson thing going on, and I just thought it was a wonderful place to be, and the art atmosphere here, it drew me in.
We're talking with Julian Van Dyke, a local artist in Lansing who has an exhibition coming up at the Arts Council of Greater Lansing in the heart of Old Town, Turner and Grand River. I've read a little bit about you online, Julian, that your work has been compared to some of the masters, Miro, Picasso. Are you a fan of Spanish-influenced art?
No, I really love Picasso. I love all his work. And I know other artists too, but you know, you have to start off on your own and start something different. But Monet, I was in New York a couple of years back. I went to the Museum of Modern Art, and they had these beautiful big pictures of Picasso, Monet, and I just, you know, we walked around for hours and hours and hours. So those are big, big artists in my mind.
Julian, show me a piece that you really love and tell me the story behind it.
Well, this particular piece is right around the corner. Kathy Holcomb and her family, they run the Absolute Gallery. So I did it in honor of her, and she says she's going to be here. I'm not, you know, depending if she buys it or not, she says, I'm going to buy it, but that's not the problem. this is more like in gratitude of what they've done for me. She hung my pieces way before I got established here, and she let me show my art in her gallery, so this is an ode to her. This particular piece right here is really a print of a 10-foot by 13-foot painting of the Jazz Fest. Robert and Terry, they've been the stalwarts of putting that together every year, and the other people that help contribute to put, you know, the Jazz Fest, the Blues Fest, the different types of art things that's happening here in Old Town, I pay a tribute to them. So it's just a wonderful place. It's not, you know, a big city like New York or Detroit, and it's just a mid-sized town where when you get other artists, and I know Michigan State is right around the corner, it gives a good mix of people doing different things. You know, we can all do different art, but I just feel that this was the place to be to show and showcase other ones' art. I belong to the Keys to Creativity out in the mall, and you wouldn't believe the amount of local talent that we have here in mid-Michigan. So just being here besides New York, and I, like I said before, I was in New York for 3 years, and they can eat you up and spit you out at the same time. So coming back home, I thought it was more gratifying for me to do that type of stuff.
Julian, do you see a rough draft in your head when you are thinking about composing a piece of art, or is it all stream of consciousness and however the brush tends to land is what happens?
You know, I used to do like that. I think I'm getting older and wiser, because now my studio and my house is turning like art junk. and you, if you come into the studio, you see art all laying around, and I'm just compulsive like that. You know, I'll see something, I'll draw, or I'll see another piece of art and I'll start going in that direction. But, you know, time isn't in our favor, so you try to make the most of it. So I think what I tried to do, I tried to sketch. I just got, my submission was accepted for the art mural in East Lansing, and that's going to be done in May. So I'm painting these big things. I'm not really getting down to the really small stuff that I only want to draw and paint. But, you know, all in all, you know, once it's done, it's done. So no matter what I try to get to or try to finish, once it's done, it's done.
Do you have a shining vision in your head, a Mona Lisa you dream about that you know you will achieve one day?
You know, as an artist, you'll never achieve that. You know, you're always trying to get the carrot. It's almost like the rabbit chasing the rabbit. So, you know, I know, like, that comes from wisdom. I know the Lord has blessed me with the talent that I have, and I identify with that. But everyone else has that too. But at the same time, you know that, you know, unless, you know, we're going to be caught up and taken to heaven, you're going to die. So I try to do as much as I can to show my art. But I also, like I said before, I like to try to show young people to showcase their works too, because there's so much bad stuff happening in the world. And, you know, you turn on the TV, you turn on the radio, and they see it. But if you keep listening to that stuff and you get away from your craft that's been given to you, then you won't participate. No one will never see your art. So I identify with that. So I think, you know, age and wisdom comes a long way, and I'm thankful that I'm not that type of person where, you know, my art is the only art. I know we have this in our heart, but I'm not like that anymore.
I think I see Robert Busby's hand resting on your shoulder.
I thank him, like, in many ways. I miss him. But like I said before, it wasn't until the very end we had these deep discussions about art, and it wasn't even about art. It was about family and where we came from. So, you know, those things happen. If I, you know, keel over tomorrow, I hope someone takes up the mantle and continues. And I hope that I'm inspiring to them like he was inspiring to me and like the other great artists that I've seen.
Julian Van Dyke is a Lansing artist. His exhibition, Things Around My City, opens today at the Gallery of the Arts Council of Greater Lansing in Old Town. Julian, this has been a lot of fun viewing your work and learning about your story behind it. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks for coming in and interviewing me.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
And I'm Mark Bayshore. Thank you for joining us today on a Live Music Friday. More live music here from Peter Harper and Will Rideout of Harper in Midwest Kind in just a few minutes. Now that Stuart Dunnings has announced his July resignation as the Ingham County prosecutor, the race is on for his seat. There are currently four declared candidates. The filing deadline is coming up. It's April 19th. The primary takes place August 2nd. Now, the winners of that primary will then face off in the November general election when voters will choose who will serve as county prosecutor from January 1st through the end of 2020. Now, between now and August, Current State will be reaching out to all of the candidates to discuss why they're running and what they would bring to the office. Lansing Assistant City Attorney Billy Jo O'Berry is one of those candidates. She joins us now in the studio. Billy Jo, welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Why are you interested in the prosecutor's job?
Well, as an assistant city attorney for the city of Lansing for almost 29 years now, I have been doing prosecution in the city of Lansing, and I also have coordinated with the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office in looking at areas for improvement. We have a group that had been meeting monthly to go over ideas to provide better efficiency in providing justice to the citizens of Ingham County. And I'm aware of what we do in the city of Lansing, and I'm aware of what was being done in the county of Ingham at the prosecutor's office. This gets a little bit confusing for non-practitioners, but let me try to briefly explain, because people say, well, why are you running for prosecutor? You're a city attorney. The city attorney's office is a small office, but we do our own prosecution of criminal misdemeanors within the city of Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
We operate under ordinance, the laws that have been passed by the city council. The prosecutor's office enforces the statutes of the state of Michigan, but those are parallel in that, for example, assault and batteries, property thefts, drunk driving, soliciting for prostitution, we both have jurisdiction in those areas. So I am a prosecutor on behalf of the city of Lansing, and it's quite confusing for
people.
That's
your role? I mean, that's a particular part of your responsibilities in the city of Lansing?
That's correct. That's
attorney's
one of,
office.
That's one of our responsibilities in the city attorney's office, and as well as the municipal work. So along with that, I have a broad variety of experience in that I would look at issues regarding development issues, drafting contracts, drafting ordinances, working out policies and procedures, those kinds of things. Right now I'm assigned to work with the Parks and Recreation Division of City of Lansing, and as you're probably aware, there's a lot of issues going on there, development issues that'll be coming up this summer. So I have two functions at the city attorney's office. In addition to having prosecuted thousands of cases in the city of Lansing, I supervise staff attorneys in the district court in the prosecution of cases for the city of Lansing. And that included our staff attorneys as well as interns from the law schools.
And I see you started your career working for county prosecutors, Ray Skedeller and Pete Howe.
That's correct.
That can't hurt, I imagine. Here.
That's correct. When I started working for Ingham County, there was no pretrial diversion program. That was my first job in Ingham County. I was hired along with Brian Motter, was the director, and I was his assistant. And we went to other counties in Michigan to find out how that pretrial diversion program worked. And I worked with Brian Motter to actually establish and set up that program under a grant for Ingham County. And I'm very proud to say that that program has lasted and is still in effect in the prosecutor's office today. We also have one in the city attorney's office, which I supervise the diversion program for the city of Lansing as well. And it's just interesting.
What does the diversion program do?
The diversion program is generally for first-time offenders who are not generally involved in criminal activities and are not likely to repeat offend. So it's a circumstantial situation, and it is a crime, a violation, but it has not resulted.
And it's experience that's relevant to the role of a prosecutor?
Exactly.
You would say it sounds like it.
Because you're making a determination. You're looking at the facts. Yes, you're looking at the law. Yes, it appears that there was a violation of law. But due to the circumstances, it looks like justice would better be served by this person being diverted out of the traditional system of going for a trial and just paying a fine. Perhaps this person needs to do community service and pay some cost to the community. And in exchange, then they do this criminal conviction is not on their record, which makes them more employable down the line. So in effect, it helps our society by this person being able to continue to be a viable part of the community, work, pay taxes, and all those kinds of things, rather than being penalized for something that was poor judgment or situational kind of incident that occurred.
We're talking with Billy Joe O'Berry, assistant city attorney for the city of Lansing, who is a declared candidate for the position of Ingham County prosecutor. You're suggesting quite a bit of familiarity with the prosecutor's office and its role in the county. What would you change? If you're clearly familiar with the landscape here, what as the county's top prosecutor are you thinking of changing? Would you change?
Well, I've worked with the law enforcement community in the city of Lansing for quite some time. And I have had cases that have come through our office, the police reports, where I have reviewed them and felt like that perhaps this case should have been issued as a felony, for example. So it has been referred over to the county prosecutor's office to have the county prosecutor look to see if it should be issued as a higher level offense. And I have been surprised at times when they have been rejected. Now, what happens often is the law enforcement division will then bring it back to our office, and then we have issued a misdemeanor on the case. The prosecutor's office took over doing soliciting for prostitution cases a while ago, several years ago. There was a decision made where we no longer prosecute those within the city of Lansing. That would be something that would need to be examined because you want to look at your resources. If you have dual jurisdiction between the county and the city, mm-hmm. and the first-time offenders soliciting for prostitution, first, second, and third offenses can be handled by another agency, do you necessarily want to tie up the resources of the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office to prosecute those? Or do you want to use the prosecutor's resources to focus on the more serious crimes that have to be handled there under statute? So that would be something that would need to be examined. The types of cases that the prosecutor's office is now handling, is there another agency that, because the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office covers all of Ingham County. So that covers East Lansing, Meridian Township, City of Lansing, Lansing Township, and
so you're saying can some possible crimes be not have to go to the county and be just adequately dealt with on a more local basis?
That's correct.
That's where you're going.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Are you saying there's a pattern that the way you started your answer to that question kind of suggested a pattern where there may be more offenses that could be categorized as felonies as opposed to misdemeanors. Is that something you were trying to say? Is there a pattern in that way in the county?
I'm not sure if there's a pattern, and that's what I would have to look at, because I have had complaints from, I'm very close to the citizens in the community. I'm out and about, and I have people approach me a lot. And I have had complaints that have been told to me where there was what they believe to be a criminal offense occur, but nothing was issued by the Ingham County Prosecutor's Office. The one situation I think of involved a theft. Now, granted, I don't know all the facts of that particular case, but from what was relayed to me, it appeared to me that there should have been some criminal charges levied in that situation. But this victim of this crime, I felt, was victimized further because there was no recourse for him. You know, he had been had some property stolen, and yet no one was following up on the prosecution. So we are paid by the taxpayers. We owe them a duty. It is our responsibility. Now, granted, prosecutor has a discretion to determine if they if there's sufficient basis to issue that charge. But I've heard that complaint several times, and I would definitely want to look into that.
I've been speaking with Assistant City Attorney for Lansing, Billie Jo O'Berry. Ms. O'Berry is one of four candidates running for Ingham County Prosecutor in the fall. We will be extending invitations to all of the candidates to be on Current State between now and the August primary. It was good to finally meet you. I've been familiar with your name for many years, and we thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck to you.
Thank you.
It is time for more live music here now. Peter Harper and Will Rideout have been our special guests here today on Live Music Friday on Current State. What are we about to hear here, guys?
This is one of the songs off the new CD called Let's Move, the CD called Show Your Love. And we thought we'd hit you with that one to try and tempt people to go, I've got to get this CD.
Oh, that's not a part of this, is it?
Well, you know, it's a tough business being original and not part of the pop scene. You have to work doubly hard to try and get your music out. And thank goodness for WKR and all those radio stations that support live music. It's a dying thing, you know.
Very good. Well, we appreciate the kind words. Let's hear the song.
Thank you. Well, there's nothing that we can't do. Well, it always seemed to get through. There's always strength in many numbers. Gotta stop from going under. Well, people say you can't change a thing, but I know if we work together, we can make this world much better. Let's move. Let's move. Let's move. Yeah, yeah. Let's move. So if someone try to put you down, all you gotta do is turn it all around. Well, don't you listen to a thing they say. Pretty soon it all just goes away. I have heard these kinds of things before. But if you want to get things started, keep your mind open-hearted and let's move. Let's move. Yeah, let's move. Let's move. You get when you're stuck in a hole. You gotta get yourself up and go. Get yourself in the groove. You gotta pick yourself up and move. Open up your eyes and you will see. Don't
bags. It's time to be free. Let's move. Let's move. Let's move, yeah. Let's move. Let's move.
Peter Harper and Will Rideout here live in Studio S on Current State's Live Music Friday. When I think of the didgeridoo, I don't anticipate swing, really, but you guys swing.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. I started doing it about 10 years ago. I actually knew a didgeridoo player who just came up and jammed with me one day back in Australia, and I guess I fell in love with the sound, and he toured with me for the first tour that I did over here when I was still coming from Australia, flying over and touring and then going back. So I actually never saw a winter for like 10 years, which was fantastic. I'm making up for it now, though. But, and so eventually, you know, after getting signed to Blind Pig Records, which was a Michigan-based record company,
right.
We ended up having to move over here. They didn't want me staying over there, so we had to move over. And I moved to beautiful Michigan and found out what a real winter was like for the first time ever. And I was shocked. I never even owned a jacket back then.
Play, you know, this is such an extraordinary sound that I think so few of our listeners have ever really heard.
Well, yeah.
Could you just improvise for 15 or 20 seconds on that?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, just so people know, it's actually a hollow piece of eucalyptus tree that is emptied out by termites, and so it's a hollow piece of wood. And the way that they play it is they put their lips on and virtually blow a raspberry, but you have to blow in and out at the same time, the circular breathing. And that's the hardest thing. Here we go.
Now, we'll give you 30 seconds to catch your breath here.
Yeah.
Is that tuned to a, is that a tuned instrument?
Yeah, these ones are naturally obviously out in the middle of the desert, and I'm not worried about tuning them, but it's become a commercial enterprise now. And, you know, for people in bands, of course, I have to have them tuned to this one particular one's in D, have another one in C, another one in F, and then I have the Plastic Fantastic, which is just a piece of PVC pipe with a plumbing collar on it so you can act like a trombone. It's kind of weird.
How about that? When you're sitting next to people on planes and you're describing Harper and Midwest Kinds music, how do you describe it?
You go ahead, Will.
Will Rideout.
It's good
here.
To have someone else.
Well, I was going to say, when I was sitting on a plane flying back from Australia and describing it, the words that we like to use are world blues fusion, because we feel like Peter's music, because it's all the music we play is the music that Peter writes and produces himself.
Based in Grass Lake now, Peter?
I do. Beautiful tropical,
right?
Grass Lake. Yeah.
What about you, Will?
I live in Lansing.
And where did the name Midwest? You're only half of the band, I understand. There's two other members. What instruments are we not hearing today that people will hear tonight in Ann Arbor and tomorrow night in Lansing?
The drums, a fantastic drummer, Mario. And James, who's probably sleeping still, he's the bass player. And so it's pretty much a four piece electric band, but we do the acoustic thing as well. Kind of like that.
You've been at this a while now. Have you generated a fan base, a following?
I hope so. Yeah. We seem to be gone are the days of playing to two people in some little tiny bar. So
good.
Thank goodness.
Good for you.
Yeah, it was over 10 years of touring the world, not just the States, but Italy, Germany, Belgium, everywhere.
How far afield do you go these days with the other three members of the band? Do you go across the Atlantic?
Will came with me to Australia in November and had his first real Australian food that we eat. Like meat pies. Meat pies.
You have those in Britain, too.
Oh, yeah.
No, they don't.
Not as good as the Aussie ones.
Not like they do in Australia. Is that it? You got a new CD out called Show Your Love. This makes how many CDs for Harper and Midwest Kind?
Oh, goodness. 10, I think.
10 altogether.
I had four with before, and then I had a couple of other. You know, it's about 10 CDs.
Very good.
Whew.
Well, you guys put together a great sound. We're glad you have been able to join us here today. Remind us where your shows are again. Tomorrow night in Lansing at the Robin Theater. Where is tonight's show in Ann Arbor again?
It's the Mash Bar, they call it, just downstairs from the Blue Tractor. What street is that? It's like, I can't remember. You can look on my website, though.
Liberty Washington. University,
I believe
Michigan.
It's Washington.
Washington, that's it. Yeah.
Washington Street. Washington.
Okay. Yeah, right in the heart of the craziness there.
Very good. We are going to let you play us out. I'll remind our listeners that we are back on Monday morning here on Current State and all of next week. Peter Harper of Harper and Midwest Kind, along with Will Rideout. We wish everybody a great weekend.
Thank you.